Orval Faubus, George Wallace. And so we know how to deal with the Donald Trump. So when we go to into the polls, it's not about who we're voting against or what we're voting for.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Reverend Dr. Jawanza Kareem Colvin, pastor of the Olivet Institutional Baptist Church here in Cleveland, Ohio. That does it for our show. I'll be doing a report back from the conventions after our 2 weeks of coverage on Friday, July 29th at the Provincetown Town Hall in Massachusetts, and Saturday, July 30th at Martha's Vineyard at Old Wailing Church. Check our website. Follow our team for the latest updates from the convention on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, we've got Chris Andre. We've got Chris Andre coming up in about an hour with Air Cascadia. In a half hour, join us for Parafoggering, hosting Fight the Empire. But up next, it is Press Watch with the news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is next on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the World Beat PDX monthly series featuring Wamba on Thursday, July 21st, at the Analog Cafe in Portland. Wamba plays percussive jazz and funk with a strong World Beat influence and will be playing two sets that evening. Again, that's Wamba on Thursday, July 21st, at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, the Republican convention has been a hoot and a holler, hasn't it? I've put my Schadenfreude hat on and quite enjoyed the proceedings, watching them fight amongst themselves, because after all, they're nasty. And of course, personally, I take it poorly that they are attacking transgender people. And was just commenting on the way here with my beloved that how ironic it is to have Caitlyn Jenner is so prominent at the convention, and they're just, well, trashing people like her and like myself. So if you'd like to talk about the Republican convention, the number to call, 503-231-8187. You want to get your talk radio on, I'd be happy to talk it over. It's an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? They seem to be doubling down on basically white nationalism. You have to... I suppose if you were not American and you're looking at it for maybe the first time, you'd have to triangulate that or get it from the shadows, because they're down on brown people and they're down on black people and they're down on queers. And yeah, it's basically white nationalism. So you want to talk about that? Give me a call. Meantime, I'm going to plow into climate change from the government. NOAA.gov, persistent heat on land and in the sea this June shattered records yet again. June 2016 was 1.62 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, breaking last year's record for the warmest June on record by 400ths of a degrees Fahrenheit. According to scientists from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Global temperature records date back 137 years to 1880. For the year to date, the average global temperature was 1.89 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This was the highest temperature for this period, surpassing the previous record set in 2015. Some notable events around the world include: the globally average sea surface temperature was record high for June and the year to date. Second, the globally average land temperature tied as record high for June, making it the 34th consecutive June with temperatures above the 20th century average. The year to date, January to June, average temperature was also record high. The it was much warmer than average temperatures, contributing to North America's warmest June since continental records began in 1910. Much warmer than average conditions engulfed most of Africa, resulting in the second warmest June since 1910 for the continent. The average Arctic sea ice extent for June was 11.4% below the 1981 to 2010 average. This was the smallest June extent since records began in 1979. The average Antarctic sea ice extent for June was 40,000 square miles below the 1981 to 2010 average, marking the smallest June Antarctic sea ice extent since 2011 and the 13th smallest on record. Continuing with climate change, it's no news that Greenland is in serious trouble. This from the independent.uk, written by Chelsea Harvey. Chelsea writes, "But now new research has helped quantify just how bad its problems are. A satellite study published last week in the journal Geophysical Research Letters suggests that Greenland ice sheet lost a whopping 1 trillion, that's with a T, 1 trillion tons of ice between the years 2011 and 2014 alone. And a big portion of it came from just five glaciers, about which scientists now have more cause to worry than ever. It's the latest story in a long series of increasingly worrisome studies on ice loss in Greenland. Research already suggests that the ice sheet has lost at least 9 trillion tons of ice in the past century, and that the rate of loss has increased over time." Speaking for myself, they've determined this by studying the height of the ice. It's very, very high above the ground, and figuring out the proportion of snow versus solid ice. Returning to the article, as I was saying in The Independent, climate scientists are keeping a close eye on the region because of its potentially huge contributions to future sea level rise, around 20 feet. If the whole thing were to melt, not to mention the damage it's already done, ice loss from Greenland may have contributed to as much as a full inch of sea level rise in the last 100 years, and up to 10% of all the sea level rise that's been documented since the 1990s. Now, about climate change, if I have time, after the fold, if I may speak metaphorically, if I have time, I have some more details on climate change. Been looking at this pretty much every day, as carefully as I can, and looking for that news you're not supposed to know, looking for those scientific articles, trying to figure out exactly where it's going. And I have an opinion, and I want to lay my opinion on you, even though I've kind of kept this part of it to myself, because it's frightening. And my opinion of the situation with climate change is that it is by far out of control, that it is a disaster. But I would also say that now is the time to decide whether to engage in geoengineering. Geoengineering is a terrible idea. The only thing worse than that would be just laying around and dying. I think that we are getting pretty close to that point, and the sooner that efforts are undertaken, the better. I would broaden the scope of geoengineering to the idea of cutting out carbon emissions. However, there is a quick and easy—I won't say a fix, but there is a semi-remedy available, and I've been mentioning this for many, many years, so forgive me, I'm going to mention it again because I would like for it to have some impact. And that is that globally, commercial and military flights which create contrails — I said contrails, not chemtrails — global military and commercial flights which create contrails should be banned at night. The reason being, as was determined rather easily in September 2001, when flights were shut down across the continental United States, it was clear, it was measurable, it was substantial, that contrail-producing flights block sunlight in the day and reduce land temperatures. Contrail-producing flights block sunlight during the day and reduce land temperatures. Here's the other half. Contrail-producing flights hold in heat at night very substantially, very measurably, definitely, no doubt about it. This suggests a global engineering scheme of banning night contrail-producing flights, thereby allowing the Earth to radiate heat at night. This would throw things into disarray. This would create storms. I am suggesting that doing such a thing will be not as devastating and not as disruptive and will not kill as much of our biosphere. I won't just talk about humans. Won't kill as much as of our biosphere and our ecospheres as not engaging in this activity would. If you want to comment on that, 503-231-8187. And I'm saying, yeah, we're at that point and it should be happening now. Now, turning to the conventions again, I will be not here next week, and I hope to call in and trying to arrange that. I believe that will happen. So next week, I will be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I would like to thank all of those of you who have contributed so that I can get there and do my thing. I'm going to be recording. I'm going to try to live stream. I'm going to try to produce print and audio pieces from Philadelphia and just generally be a KBOO reporter, which is a change for me, and maybe it's a good time to emphasize this. This program is opinion. It is polemics. It is analysis, and I have not been, by and large, I have not been doing journalism. However, I'm going to try to get up to speed and put on my journalism hat, go to Philadelphia, and do my thing. So, news. Six protesters from a pro-Bernie Sanders group were arrested in a sit-in Wednesday in Philadelphia. This is from Dan Spinelli writing in Politico. And what could be an early hint of what's to come once the Democratic convention begins next week? That's according to a spokesman for the activists. The afternoon protest took place at the Center City headquarters of the Democratic National Convention's host committee, which the activists condemned for refusing to release the convention's financial records. The protesters were arrested for disorderly conduct and failure to disperse, but released shortly afterwards and issued civil fines, according to Reclaim Philadelphia spokesman Alex Nagel. The group had marched to the headquarters from City Hall, you know, that giant City Hall in Philadelphia. After staging a rally there about 4 p.m., the sit-in began around 4:45 and continued for an hour. Then they started arresting, and they write, while not listed as an approved protest group during the convention, and I just have to depart from that. Approved protest group? Really? Seriously? Yeah, that's where we're at. Approved. Returning to the text, Reclaim Philadelphia is one of numerous groups, such as Black Man for Bernie, Occupy DNC, and Bernie for Bust, with designs on keeping Sanders' revolution alive, while his rival, Hillary Clinton, assumes the Democratic nomination. Reclaim Philadelphia is mainly composed of former Sanders campaign volunteers. The sit-in specifically targeted the host committee's refusal. You can read more on that at politico.com. This is why I'm going to Philadelphia. I'm not actually going in to the special security area, national security area, where you have no rights whatsoever. I don't want to cover that. I think that will be well covered, and it will be well covered here on KBOO by Pacifica and by Democracy Now. No, I want to be in the streets, and I want to cover these protests, and I want to cover them in a different way. I want to cover them with content. I want to actually have these people's voices on the air, in print. I want to ask them what brought them thousands of miles across the country to Philadelphia, why they're so fired up, what they're protesting, and what they hope to gain, and I'll present that to you. And, of course, I'll be watching the police, and what I've watched so far is not too encouraging. Let me give you an example. This from Billy Penn, a local Philadelphia print, let's see, what was the word I was looking for? A print agency? No, that's not going to do. Anyway, a newspaper. President of the FOP Lodge 5, John McNesby, who represents police officers in Philadelphia, told Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT that he thinks attacks on police officers similar to the ones in Dallas and Baton Rouge will continue until there's a political solution to the problem. Skipping down, He said, we need to increase the manpower. We need officers to watch over each other. The commanders need to watch over their officers. And the community needs to step up. If they see something, if they hear something, they need to report it. Everyone wants to run around and protest. No justice, no peace. How about when someone in the community is shot that they step up and start to cooperate? The first thing I'm hearing from officers on the scene is no cooperation. Everyone wants to turn their back. Until someone wants to open up that dialogue, then we're going to continue with these problems. As for the Black Lives Matter movement, McNesby says, quote, my thought is that the Black Lives Matter movement is an absolute disgrace. There's ways to protest. There's ways to do things to get your message across in a respectful way. The way they treat officers in the street, it's a small group of people. Most of them aren't even from the Philadelphia area. They are a terrorist group, as far as I'm concerned, and they need to be dealt with strongly. You want to protest, protest against whoever you wish, but make sure you do it legally and obtain the permits like everyone else has to, and make sure you abide by the law, end quote. So now I need to back up and analyze this. So you have the president of the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge 5, for Philadelphia. The convention's about to happen. And this guy is saying that Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group, which is absolutely absurd. This is a protest group that's very open. Its leaders are known. Their addresses are known, and they're being very open and taking a personal risk in doing so. And people are going into the streets saying that Black Lives Matter, which should not be a controversial phrase at all. And they're being very cooperative in that sense. And these are protests. This is a protest group. Why is he calling it a terrorist group? Well, that doesn't require much analysis, does it? I mean, if it's a terrorist group, then you can do whatever the hell you want violently against them. This is a heads up. This is the Fraternal Order of Police. And yeah, they have the power, much more so when it comes to police activity than a mayor. They're saying that they're going to be violent. They're saying that they consider Black Lives Matter to be illegitimate terrorists. And we all know what Americans do to terrorists. This is extremely ugly. And I want to draw public attention to this right now before the beating and who knows what else starts happening. It gets worse. From Fox News, singer Demi Lovato and actress America Ferrera, two Latina millennial entertainers who have also worked as vocal activists for Hispanic causes, announced on Twitter, respectively, that they will be speaking at the Democratic National Convention. Also speaking, and this is from Philly.com, members of the Mothers of the Movement, a group that includes Gwen Carr, mother of Eric Garner, Sabrina Fulton, mother of Trayvon Martin, and Leslie McSpadden, mother of Michael Brown. Well, what sort of response did we get from the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police? Let me lay it on you. Fraternal Order of Police State Lodge President Les Neri, on the 20th, issued the following statement. Regarding the Democratic Party's upcoming convention, quote, we are aware of the controversy caused by the Democratic Party's insensitive choice of speakers at their upcoming convention. The 40,000 members of the Pennsylvania FOP State Lodge stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Philadelphia FOP Lodge 5 and share their shock and disgust. This unnecessary and pandering move by the Democratic National Party is exactly what the country does not need. People are already questioning the role of law enforcement without being tossed into political crosshairs in the hopes of simply winning an election. Now more than ever, we need to rally around our brave men and women in uniform instead of looking for ways to tear them apart, end quote. So again, I know it's kind of repulsive, but let's look carefully at this. What are they saying? Already, we have the FOP coming out and saying that Black Lives Matter are terrorists. Now, the Democratic Party wants to bring out mothers of the movement, mothers whose children have been slain by police, and they want to say that they are shocked and disgusted and imply that the Democratic Party instead should have a police presence. And of course, they do have a police presence. They actually have a former police commissioner speaking at the Democratic convention. Rally around our brave men and women instead of tearing them apart. How does it tear apart men and women in uniform to point out that Black Lives Matter exists, that there is a cause there, that there is a grievance there, that people are being slain? This is ugly. And so this is what we're, this is what is shaping up in Philly. And I would say that the police can scarcely be more militant and scarcely be more violent in their words. And they are being joined by thousands and thousands of, well, everyone from National Guard to local cops to rent-a-cops like G-Force. The town is going to be swarming with cops, absolutely swarming. Uniforms have been bought to the tune of millions of dollars, not uniforms, but battle outfits to attack protesters with. So this is coming up. Number to comment with 503-231-8187. All right, now turning to other news relating to the United States and violence. There was a coup in Turkey. Turkey, I would like to remind you, is the site of, oh, I think at least 100 U.S. nuclear weapons. That's a mouthful, isn't it? I mean, a nuclear weapon is the death of a city, and to think that there are 100 in a foreign country, to think that there are hundreds at all that exist is rather frightening. There are actually thousands in the United States, but there are 100 or hundreds in Turkey. So keep that in mind. I have two articles, one from The Soccer, thesaker.is, which I'll warn you is a pro-Russian and rather anti-queer website. Very useful in these things, though. And Vijay Prashad, writing in The Hindu, which was also in Counterpunch. Vijay Prashad writes, as if from nowhere, a section of the Turkish armed forces attempted a coup d'etat on July 15th at 10 p.m. Reports of gunfire near the general staff headquarters in Ankara, Turkey's capital, and began the barrage that lasted until 2:30 a.m. on July 16th, when the National Intelligence Agency said that the coup had been thwarted. Chaos reigned in the intervening hours. The soldiers in their heavy armor held sections of Ankara and Istanbul, including some media stations and parts of the transportation network. 2 hours into the coup, the security services had begun to tell reporters that the unrest had been inspired by the U.S.-based Islamic scholar Fethullah Gülen. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan took to FaceTime, a video telephony app, to ask people to go into the streets to defeat the coup. From the mosques, imams also called for public action. And by 12:35, the special prosecutor had already begun to frame charges against the coup leadership. It was clear that this coup, the sixth in Turkey's modern history, had failed before it could be consolidated. Now, departing from this text, when it says that the imams asked people to go into the streets, they did this from the minarets. There are loudspeakers. They are also capable of doing this on radio. Very powerful public mobilization capability there in principally Islamic states. And the other context, in case you didn't already know, Mr. Erdogan has been becoming increasingly totalitarian, obnoxious, and I would say that the U.S. isn't exactly happy with him. And of course, there is that context, hundreds of nuclear weapons, but there's more than that. The U.S. uses Turkey as an airbase and uses Turkey to attack Syria and many other ways. The U.S. and Turkey are very well entwined. An analogy might be with Pakistan. Returning to the article from Vijay Prashad, writing in The Hindu, Mr. Erdogan, who has long attempted to create pliable state institutions, said that the coup was a gift from God to us because this will be a reason to cleanse our army. The government arrested more than 6,000 people from the military and other state institutions. Yeah, I said 6,000 people. Saying that the Gulen movement had become a cancer virus on society, Mr. Erdogan pledged to purge his membership from positions of authority. The ultimate arbiter of who is or is not in the Gulen movement will be left to Mr. Erdogan's own loyalists, who are likely to remove those who have long resisted the president's own bid to monopolize power. Mr. Erdogan deliberately links the Gulen movement to the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, which the Turkish army has attacked in its bases in southeastern Turkey and in Iraq. To call both the Gulen movement and the PKK terrorists is a convenient way to sweep up all Erdogan enemies into one target and to use the coup, a gift from God, as the opportunity to go after them with vehemence. was the coup a plot by followers of Mr. Kulin? So far, he has denied responsibility for the coup, saying that a military coup cannot develop democracy. Indeed, his own participation is not of the essence. What will be useful is that this coup will allow Mr. Erdogan to flush out some of Mr. Kulin's followers and remove them from places of authority in the military and the judiciary. A senior military officer in Turkey said that over the past half century, the Turkish military has been increasingly isolated from society, has built parallel institutions and beliefs and values, partly Republican. They're at some removed from the Islamic piety and suffocation of Mr. Erdogan's Justice and Development Party, the AKP. It is likely that some military leaders felt that their putsch might inspire others to join in against the president's centralization of power. The amateur attempt to seize power suggests either that these soldiers had no idea what they're doing and so had been set up, or that their officers believed that the propaganda of the deed would bring society and the rest of the military on their side. Nothing like this happened. Smatterings of soldiers on the bridges in Istanbul did not make much of an impression on the public. This was nothing like the 1980 military coup in Turkey, nor like the covert coup of 1993 or the postmodern coup of 1997. Now, turning, there's much more on that. As I was saying, it ran in the Hindu. You can find it on Counterpunch. Now, turning to the soccer, there's a lot of indirect evidence that the USA was indeed involved in this coup, and he writes, the coup involved a very large number of people. We can get a sense of the magnitude of this coup by looking at the huge purge now taking place in Turkey. According to various sources, it includes no less than 6,000 people, many senior officers, judges, prosecutors. So the thing we need to ask ourselves is, how likely is it that the USA did not know what was being prepared by the coup plotters? He writes, I submit that in a country essentially at war, where U.S. forces are involved in combat operations in nearby Syria and Iraq are deployed, and where the U.S. reportedly keeps 50 tactical nuclear weapons, I think that's probably correct, and so I hereby apologize for saying hundreds, 50 tactical nuclear weapons, the notion is that the USA did not see this coming is far-fetched. Turkey is a NATO member state, which in practical terms means that the U.S. has full control over the Turkish military, and we now know, thanks to Sybil Edmonds, that the Turkish deep state has very close ties to the U.S. deep state, and we are to believe that nobody in the USA saw this coming? Furthermore, when Erdogan says that the USA did not hurry to condemn the coup, he is absolutely correct. In fact, it was rather amusing, he writes, for me to see that all the Western media was indicating that the coup had succeeded, while the Iranians and the Russians reported the coup had failed. If that was a case of wishful thinking on both sides, what does it tell us about the wishes? Now let's look at the cui bono angle. He writes, some, including Fethullah Gulen, have suggested that this coup was a false flag operation by Erdogan himself. And it is true that he declared that this coup was a gift from God because this will be a reason to cleanse our army. But the reality is that this coup is a huge embarrassment for Erdogan, who had already purged the Turkish armed forces many times over and who could not take the risk of having planned a false flag turn into the real thing. Even if General Becker Van, the commander of Turkey's Incirlik Air Base, has been detained by Turkish authorities accused of complicity in the attempted coup. So, not only did this coup show that Erdogan was hated at the very top level of the Turkish armed forces, but the failure of the coup has now resulted in a huge purge, which will tremendously weaken the Turkish armed forces, who are involved not only in Syria, but also in a bloody civil war against the Kurds. So, the notion that Erdogan triggered this coup himself seems very far-fetched, he writes. Then, of course, he says there is Russia. And again, this is from thesoccer.is, a pro-Russian website. He says, while I wholeheartedly agree that Russia will immensely benefit from this failed coup, I am also convinced that the Russians never had anywhere near the means to trigger a coup in Turkey. Neither the Kemalists nor the supporters of Kulin are pro-Russian, and Russia simply does not have the kind of access in this major NATO country to trigger military coups. He writes, as for USA, had the coup succeeded, they could have placed a compliant and probably more reliable military leader at the helm of power in Turkey. Now that the coup has failed, and now that Erdogan appears to be furious at the USA is the big loser in this outcome. But had the coup succeeded, keep in mind that the war in August 08, and the case of U.S. multiple personality disorder over Syria have shown that there is no unified U.S. foreign policy. There is a White House foreign policy, there is a CIA foreign policy, and there is a Foggy Bottom foreign policy and a Pentagon foreign policy. We even know that there is a separate neocon foreign policy. Any one of them could have pushed the coup plotters to take action, just like the neocons pushed Saakashvili to attack South Ossetia. So you can find more on that at thesoccer.is. I have run out of time. I did want to bring up a couple of articles that you can find at mongabay.com about the rainforest. Rainforest is drying up from drought, is not a carbon sink at this point. Overall, is releasing carbon. And from Reuters, North American forests are not the climate change remedy hoped for. That's an article by Sebastian Malley. You can find that at Reuters.com. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Once again, next week, I will not be here. I'll be reporting from Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. Please tune in at that time and at other times to KBOO Portland, KBOO.fm. On the World Wide Web, in that manner, we broadcast to all the ships at sea.
Tune into KBOO Monday through Thursday from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. for special live convention coverage produced by the Pacifica News Network. Monday, July 18th through Thursday, July 21st, tune in to comprehensive progressive coverage of the Republican convention happening in Cleveland. Again, that's July 18th through the 21st, 5 to 9 p.m. for coverage from the Republican convention produced by the Pacifica News Network here on your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest is Donald Worster, who is a professor of